Today on Focal Point from Pastor Mike Fabares.
Before you make that big decision, think about timing. And you may be able to tell all your friends, here's the reason we're starting this business. Here's the reason we're moving to Alaska. Here's the reason we're doing it. And maybe they'll sit there with their mouth shut saying, I can't argue with that. And you've got them all convinced that this is a good decision. Once you decide it's a good decision, you got another question. Is this a good time?
If you consider yourself a Christian, you probably want to know God's will for your life and live in a way that pleases Him. But it's not as if the Bible tells us where to live, what career to pursue, or who to marry, so how do we decide? Well, today on Focal Point, Pastor Mike Fabares lays out a biblical strategy for thinking through big decisions. He titled this message, Before You Make Your Next Commitment. Well, now let's open to 1 Corinthians chapter 7.
As we reach the midway point in chapter 7, what Paul does from verses 25 to 40 is he continues to help these Corinthians think through the question, if you're single, should you get married or not? Now, what I thought I'd do in looking at this text is say, why don't we just take this text instead of applying it immediately to the topic at hand, why don't we look at it as a divinely inspired template for decision making? Because that's all really that's going on in verses 25 to 40. Paul is helping these guys think through whether they should or should not get married. But this morning, let's talk to people regardless of their marital status and ask ourselves the question, how do we go about making those big decisions, whether we're looking at buying a house or changing careers or having another kid or starting a new thing over here or moving to Alaska or, I don't know, whatever it is that you're thinking about doing, how do we take God's divine way of making that decision and apply it to that question? So let's get started. Verse 25, topic at hand, of course, young single Christians in the church at Corinth. He says, now about virgins. For you, it might be who knows what, but whatever the issue. Paul says, I have no command from the Lord, but I give a judgment as one who by the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. He says, because of the present crisis, the crisis that the Corinthians were facing, I think it is good for you to remain as you are. In other words, it's probably not a good time to plan a wedding. What is the present crisis of Corinth? We need to get the historical context. Don't mean to bore you, but here comes some ancient history. The book of 1 Corinthians was written in the spring of AD 56. That's 2 years after they just installed a new emperor in Rome who was a real up-and-coming guy that everybody was talking about on the front pages of the paper every day, and his name was Nero. So I opened my dictionary this week and I said, how could they possibly describe everything that Nero was in one sentence? And here's what my dictionary said. Nero. Emperor of Rome from 54 to 68, known for his, here's the two words that describe him in my dictionary, his cruelty and his depravity. Thinking, wow, that's quite a summation of someone's life. That's not the summation I want of my life. Hopefully that's not the summation you want of your life. But Nero, when his whole thing was done, they said, wow, what a cruel and depraved person that was. Guess who his favorite target for all of his cruelty and depravity was? Yeah, you've been to Sunday school. Christians. He hated them. His growing vexation and anger toward Christians just grew from the beginning of his reign until the end. This is a bad guy. And Paul was saying, I'm sensing things are not looking good for the future of the church in Corinth. As a matter of fact, we see his kind of attitude 2 years after Paul wrote 1 Corinthians. He ends up murdering his mother for dabbling in the affairs of politics in Rome. Now, when your mom's a nag, you might write her a letter, give her a call, have a talk. He cuts her head off and kills his mom. That's the kind of guy we're dealing with. 2 years after that, there's a fire in Rome. A big fire. It's kind of like the Chicago fire of ancient Rome. All the stuff was destroyed. Economic problems, administrative problems. Nero's looking for a scapegoat to blame it on, so none of it looks bad for him. And he wants a target. Guess who he chooses? Christians. He actually comes up with the idea that the Christians sabotaged the empire of Rome and set the city ablaze. Right. But that's what he says. and gives himself now a political excuse to go after Christians and exterminate and shut down every church he can find. And he sends his henchmen out and starts doing the job. As a matter of fact, Nero was known. He was the guy, you know, if you ever had that classic picture in your mind of Christians being thrown to the lions, you can thank Nero for that idea. That was his. He got it going. He would wrap Christians in animal skins, freshly skinned animals, so you had a nice, tasty smell to you, and throw you out there naked with nothing but an animal skin around you, and have the lions go chewing off your body parts as people sat up there and drank beer and ate Dodger dogs in the Colosseum. That was his idea of fun. As a matter of fact, you want to know how depraved he was toward the Christians. After the fire of Rome, he was so angry at the Christians and wanted to make such a strong point. He would take Christians, have his henchmen round them up alive, bring them into the palace courtyard. He would have his people dip each one of them in hot wax. He'd have them all completely drenched in hot wax. You can imagine what that was like. Their clothes would be completely drenched in wax. They would pull whatever robe they had up or their pants down. They would take a big skewer like you would buy at Lowe's to kind of hold your tree up so it doesn't blow down in the wind. They would sharpen the tip. They would stick it up their rear end. Picture that. And imagine that. And then they would put them on the skewer and plant them in a hole, and they would line them up all the way around his palace garden. And then just about when he'd bring all his friends over and they were ready to start, he'd have his guys go out there with a torch and light every one of those people on fire and say, "Burgers are ready. Come on, let's eat, guys. Well, look at those. Those are the guys that started the fire in Rome." Paul said, "I sense there's bad times coming." Here's what Jesus said in John 16, and I'm sure it was resonant in Paul's mind. He said, "You guys will be outcasts in the synagogue." They were used to that. He said, "But a time will come when those who kill you will think they're doing service to God." Paul said, "I know it's going to get bad here." And it was, and it did. As a matter of fact, ironically enough, Nero was the guy that signed the execution order for Paul's own death. Nero ended up killing Paul. If you read John Fox's book, his accounts of the early martyrs, Fox's Book of Martyrs, in the beginning of that book in chapter 1, it talks about some of the first targets of Nero's persecution were citizens and members of the Church of Corinth. He went after them. Paul says, "You know what? I'm not trying to be prophetic here. I'm not reading the tea leaves. I haven't been to the palm reader. I'm just telling you, things don't look good for the church in Corinth. Bad times are coming." He sees them on the cusp of a kind of persecution the church had never experienced. Oh yeah, a couple guys had been stoned and imprisoned, and we read that in the book of Acts, but this kind of stuff hadn't happened. It was going to get bad. And he says, "You know what? I don't think it's a good time to be picking out wedding invitations and figuring out what colors you're going to have. And you know what?" Here's what he says. "If you're married, don't call the divorce lawyer. If you're unmarried, don't look for a wife. If you do marry, though," and this has been clear throughout the context, "hey, you haven't sinned. There's nothing sinful about it. If a virgin marries, she hasn't sinned. But those who marry will face many troubles in this life, and I want to spare you of this." If you don't have that phrase in the forefront of your mind that we just circled because of the present crisis, you can think that Paul's really down on marriage and thinks it's a real bummer because he's a single guy and, you know, whatever his problem is, he thinks marriage is a real drag. That's not what he's saying. He's saying, "You know what? It's bad enough to face persecution as a single guy. But we've all heard the stories, even in modern day persecutions of Christians. They love to use wives and children as leverage against you in the midst of their torture." And he says, "You know, not a good time to be looking for a spouse right now in Corinth because of the present crisis." Paul surveys the climate. What's it look like? Is this a good time right now to get married? He says, "Probably not. My judgment would say not a good time." Number one on your outline. First thing to consider. That's a dramatic backdrop. And I don't know what the backdrop is for you financially, economically, or whatever else. But let's at least, number one, consider the climate. Before you make that big decision, think about timing. Marriage is good. Paul's just saying now's not a good time to consider it. Now's not a good time to do it. But if you do it, fine, you can do it. Nothing sinful about it. But you know, I just don't think it's the best time for that. By the way, if you want to talk about being godly, make sure you work real hard at caring about the time to do whatever it is you're going to do. I know you think it's like just a hippie 60s song, but Ecclesiastes chapter 3, first 8 or 9 verses, there is this truth that should, in our hearts, resonate as a challenge for us to discern the times. Here's what Solomon wrote. "There's a time for everything, a season for every activity under the sun, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to uproot, a time to kill, a time to heal." I'd sing it for you if I could. "A time to tear down, a time to build, time to weep, time to laugh, time to scatter stones, time to gather stones. There's a time for everything." The challenge that leaves us with is trying to discern whether it's this time to gather stones or this time to cast them. We got to figure out what's right. Is it a good time for it? Here's the question to ask. I put question underneath point one. Just jot this one down. Here's the question I want you to ask. Is this the right time? Because there's a right time for it. And then there's a not so right time for it. And you may be able to tell all your friends, here's the reason we're starting this business. Here's the reason we're moving to Alaska. Here's the reason we're doing it. And maybe they'll sit there with their mouth shut saying, I can't argue with that. And you've got them all convinced that this is a good decision. Once you decide it's a good decision, you've got another question. Is this a good time? See, because it's not just about convincing everybody this is a good thing to do. Now the question is this the best time to do it? You must consider timing. We could look at 100 verses. Matter of fact, that'd be a great study. Just go through the Bible and look at how often God is concerned with doing things at just the right time. He's interested in timing. So we should be too. You know, making the move, doing the thing, getting married, starting the business, buying the house, whatever it is you're dealing with, just know there's a right time. See, the time that he's talking about, though, the present crisis, not a very good time. Not a very good time for many things at all. Actually, he says in verse 29, hey, the time is short. I'm not sure this is an eschatological statement. I'm not sure he's talking about the end of the world. I think he's talking about life as they know it in Corinth, man. It's not going to be the way it was. As a matter of fact, from now on, those who have wives should live as if they had none. And before you build a theology on that verse, just know what it's not saying, because we've already gone through the first part of 1 Corinthians. Sacred commitment, important, marriage is good, you got to have sex with your spouse. All those things are constants. But there is something about not being so engrossed in this that you miss keeping your eye on the ball, because here comes persecution and it's going to be hard. So I got to focus. I got priorities here. You're not going to make it on the cover of Marriage Magazine, if there is such a thing, right? Because you're not going to be the poster child for me, because really, all of life is not tied up here, see? And he says this. He says, those who mourn as if they did not. I'm not overly obsessed with my grief. I'm not overly engrossed in my sadness. And inversely, I'm not overly engrossed with my happiness. He says, those who are happy as if they were not. Those who buy something as if it was not theirs to keep, which, by the way, was already Rome's practice. They loved to go into churches and confiscate all their property. All the members of the church were going to take all your property, take your houses, take your stuff, take your business. And Paul knew this is a part of it. And then he's kind of broadening to a broader principle, though. When you say that, I guess there's a sense in which that is good, whether Nero's the emperor or Constantine's the emperor, it doesn't matter. He says, because ultimately, those who use the things of the world as if not engrossed in them. Why? Because here's a truth that's always true. Verse 31, for this world in its present form is passing away. And so in some sense, there's a detachment from being so engrossed in really anything that's temporal. And so he says, got to stay focused. And right now, remember the phrase here, because of the present crisis, you're really going to need to be focused on walking faithfully with Christ, because times are going to get hard. We're on the cusp of some bad persecution. So timing in terms of sending out wedding invitations, man, rethink that. Now, if you do it, okay, you're not sinning, but man, in my judgment, not a good time to do that. He's in tune with God, and we ought to, too, when we consider the climate. God, is this the right time? Help me figure this out. Let me use my brain. Let me be very careful how I live, as Ephesians 5 says, making the most of the time or the opportunities. All right. Why is it important to keep my eye on the ball? Well, verse 32 through 35 helps us with that. As a matter of fact, there's a word here that just recurs over and over and over again, the root of it at least, and it's a word that's used in two different ways, the inverse and then just in your face. And that is in verse 32, we get the inverse. He says, I would like you to be free from concern. This word based on a root that is about kind of sticking to something, being obsessed with something or concerned about something, is also the same cognate of that is to be divided or split in my thinking. And he talks about that when he talks in verse 34 about someone's interest being divided. He says, I don't want you to be scattered. I don't want you to be, it's the word also that's often translated in the New Testament, anxiety. You know what that feels like, right? You're thinking about everything. Your mind is going a million places. You're worried about this. You can't do your work, can't concentrate here. And the text says, look, I don't want you to be that way. I'd like you to be free from concern. He says, an unmarried man is concerned about the Lord's affairs. He can focus and keep his eye on the ball and say, okay, I'm here to serve God. I'm here to do his will. How he can please the Lord, he elaborates. Verse 33. But the married man, his concern is about the affairs of the world. How he can please his wife, or certainly under the umbrella of the present crisis, how I can keep my wife alive, how we can make it through this bad time. And his interests are divided. now I have kind of loyalties going in different directions here and concerns in different directions. He used the complementary side. The gal, same way. Unmarried woman, a virgin, she's concerned about the Lord's affair, same root. Her aim is to be devoted or set apart for the Lord, both in body and spirit. But the married woman is concerned, here's our word again, a different form of it, about the affairs of the world. She's focused on that. Her mind is brought to that, how she can please her husband. I'm saying this for your own good, verse 35 says, not to restrict you, but that you may live in a right way in an undivided devotion to the Lord. See, now there's an assumption in this passage that can't be assumed in congregations today. And that is that Christians in Corinth understood, because they were hearing the gospel from the apostles, that what God is requiring of his people is a supreme devotion to him. I know today we often think people can make God a priority and kind of add God to their life. The gospel is really clear in the Bible, though. The apostolic gospel, the New Testament gospel, is that God is everything to us. He is the supreme and unchallenged loyalty and love and commitment in our lives. Keep your finger here and turn with me to Luke 14, just to briefly, parenthetically illustrate this for you through Christ's teaching. Christ, just like today, experienced crowds kind of coming to him and not fully understanding what it meant to be followers of him. And so he clarifies. Luke 14. Look at verse 25. Large crowds were traveling with Jesus. Right there you should know. You got people probably don't quite get it with a lot of mixed, you know, motivations. And he says, okay, wait a minute. I got something to say. He turns to them and he says this, verse 26. Now hold your head together because it might explode at this point. You're going to hear something radical. Are you ready? If anyone comes to me and does not, what's the verb? Hate. Oh, wow. His father, his mother, his wife and his children, his brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he can't be my disciple. We must have read that wrong. Let's look at it again. Large crowds traveling. Hey, Messiah, we're on your team. We want to join your club. Wait a minute. You can join my club, but first, you've got to hate your father, your mother, your wife, your children, your brothers and sisters, yes, even your own life. If you do that, you can be my disciple. But if you don't do that, you can't be my disciple. What? What are you talking about? I read Exodus 20 once, and I saw in there that we're supposed to honor our father and mother. That's the first people he tells me to hate, right? Hate my mother and father. What are you talking about? I thought it was a biblical thing to be kind and loving and devoted and committed to my mom. If my mom's out, you know, destitute on the streets, you know, walking around in her bathrobe with no money, and I'm here, you know, worshiping and everything's cool with me, then I'm not a very good person. Why? Because God says I had to care and honor and respect. New Testament says obey and give all this deference to my parents. I had to have a commitment there. And you're telling me here, hate? What are you talking about? It's kind of like this. Kind of like when my wife looked at our bathroom and said, you know, it really needs to be painted. And so, you know, 6 months later, I said, okay, maybe. So I run down to the paint store and I realize that, you know, in my mind, our bathrooms are white. So I go in there and I say, I need some white paint. Paint my bathroom. And he looks at you like you just said something really stupid. Because you know how many kinds of white paint there are? You know how many shades of white paint there are? Like 32,000, at least. They pull out the board. They pull out the sheets. They pull out the swatches. And they suggest, first of all, maybe Navajo white would be nice for you. Okay? I'm looking at Navajo white. Say, fine, wrap it up. Cool. Let's do it. But wait a minute, and then he goes down the board, and we go from Navajo white to Charlie white to Joe's white, and we finally reach, at the end of the swatch, the angelic throne room of God white, the Shekinah glory white, right? Now, I started with Navajo white, and I'm thinking, this looks pretty good to me, nice clean bathroom. I like this one, but now I lay it over the top of Shekinah glory white, and you know what Navajo white looks like next to that one? Brown. Like, I thought this was white. This is brown. But then I go over to the purples, thinking maybe that would surprise my wife, paint it purple. And I put the Navajo white over the purple paint, and I'm thinking, okay, I don't know what was wrong with me a minute ago. This is white. See, that's all Jesus is trying to do to us here. It's shocking language, I realize. But he's saying, wait a minute, I know you're supposed to love your parents, love your wife, all that would be a really good thing. But when it comes to your loyalty and commitment, devotion to me, I am so supreme. I'm asking for such a supreme resolution for me to be number one that there's really no rival. As a matter of fact, the closest rival, the most foundational command of the Old Testament in the Decalogue as it relates to relationships, my honoring of my parents, it'll look like brown compared to the kind of commitment I'm looking for here. See, he says, hey, your father and mother, your wife, and prepare yourself now, Orange County parents. Look at the next word. And what's the word? I know you're afraid to say it. What does it say? Children. Hate my children. I'm talking brown compared to white. I'm saying this love is so supreme. It's not, God is not a priority to me. He becomes the priority. Kids, oh, not, such a distant second, man. It looks like brown. God wants to be supreme. He says his brothers and sisters, which gets a little easier for most of us. Okay, hating brothers. And then he says this, yes, even his own life. Now, I know we've been brainwashed in our culture. We all think we hate ourselves. But let me tell you, you are so deeply stinking in love with yourself. Even that you'd be offended by that proves my point. You're in love with yourself. I mean, if there's any commitment you have that's supreme, it's you love you. You do. You want to know who you love? You open your wallet, look at that driver's license. That's the person you love the most. And the reason you hate the picture is because you love yourself so much, you want to look better than that. You love you. It really is a number one love in our life. I know you've been taught all this self-esteem stuff and that we all hate ourselves. It's not true, see. I mean, the reason we feel like we're getting rooked and we're as terrible as we want it better because we love ourselves. And so God says, even that, even your love for you looks like brown next to this white. Because this supreme loyalty and commitment puts me first. So far first, ultimate priority. If you don't do that, you can't be my disciple. Sorry, doesn't work. See, okay, that's what the Corinthian Christians understood. Now all of a sudden, knowing that God isn't some addition to my life and I would like the little insurance policy so I don't go to the fiery place with the guy in red. I want to go to heaven. Okay, great. I want God in my life. Open my heart. Pray the prayer. Okay, come. I'm in. No. It's more than that. See, to be a follower of Christ, Jesus says, you can't follow me unless you realize it's deep, it's loyal, it's foundational, it's priority. I'm God. Don't you realize that? See, now, with that commitment, he says, before you start making other commitments here, you need to start thinking about your ultimate calling, your primary calling. Your primary calling is to God.
Resetting our priorities, because it's all about God's glory. You're listening to Focal Point with Mike Fabares and a message titled, Before You Make Your Next Commitment. If you joined us a little late today, or if you'd like to share this message with a friend, visit focalpointradio.org. You can also find the complete archive of Pastor Mike's teaching on our mobile app. It's free to download and listen from your smartphone or tablet. Just search for Focal Point in your favorite app store. It's a joy to make these messages available free of charge, but we can only do so because listeners like you support this ministry financially. Now, if you believe in the importance of the solid, unwavering, accurate Bible teaching on this program, we invite you to partner with us today. And when you give right now, we have a practical book we'd like to send you to express our thanks. It's called Business for the Glory of God. Author Wayne Grudem argues that business itself glorifies God when it's conducted in a way that imitates God's character. Learn how your faith can shape every aspect of work, from interaction with customers to borrowing and lending, and everything in between. Perhaps as we talked about decisions today, you were thinking about a particular career move you're considering. Well, this book will give you some great food for thought, challenging, inspiring, and infusing new purpose into your work, no matter what your job title may be. And again, it comes with our thanks for your support today. Mention the book when you give by calling 888-320-5885. That's 888-320-5885. Or go to focalpointradio.org. If you'd rather send your donation by mail, write to Focal Point, Post Office Box 2850, Laguna Hills, California, 92654. And be sure to include a note requesting the book, Business for the Glory of God. On behalf of all those who listen, thank you for your support. Well, I'm Dave Drewy, inviting you to join us Thursday when we'll continue learning how to make biblical decisions about our commitments. It's another message from 1 Corinthians 7, next time on Focal Point.
Hi, it's Pastor Mike here. I've got some exciting news. Next summer, I'm going to be teaching a 7-day Bible cruise to Alaska. I want you to come with me. It's August the 7th through the 14th, 2022. We're going to explore the Alaskan coast. We're going to explore the depth of scripture. You've got to check this out. FocalPointMinistries.org/Alaska to learn more.
Today's program was produced and sponsored by Focal Point Ministries.